Good evening. You are listening to Skip Intro with me, Lee Chui Lin, as well as Bahi Yusuf and Ian McNally. And today we are talking about the Fab Five.
I had pretty much given up on kind, genuine people. I feel like I don't belong.
Absolutely not. You are not ready. You are not ready. Oh!
Let's do this.
Ask for help. You're not invincible.
Sometimes you just need a little support.
Did any of you guys make your first friends at camp?
And I made you.
And I'm your guys' friend. Yeah. Cute. It's just
like a miracle. So, of course, you may have seen this. They are back for Queer Eye Season 3, which is, of course, the third season in little over a year. So we want to talk a little bit about how this season stacked up against the others.
Yeah, so it's great to have the Fab Five back, and I think it's better now that it's been 9 months since the second season rather than the 5 months it was between the first and the second.
Yeah, that was a bit of a... I think everybody was surprised when the second one came out. Like, yeah. It just came out of the blue.
And it made me... I think it made us worry at the time, we were talking about it separately, that they were going to run it into the ground because it was so popular. Which is also kind of weird when you're watching that first season and everyone seems so happy to see them, even though they probably have no clue who these guys are.
That's true. Yeah. I mean, I'm okay with that conceit. I'm like, you know, obviously they would have met beforehand and they did that introduction thing, I think.
I presume like they have a week. Come down to an hour. It's not that. There's a lot they leave out.
Yeah.
So this year we've got a prison guard with amazing hair, a scruffy camp counselor, two sisters who run a barbecue business, a self-deprecating groom, a strong, powerful black lesbian woman, a grieving single father, a sloth gamer, and a baby daddy. And I think this year has a better mix of the different types of people than they did in the second season. The first season, the first episode was like, when I first heard about it, was like, okay, Queer Eye, I remember the old series a little. I think when the time it came on, I don't know what I was doing, but I never seemed to be around when it was on. I was aware of the show, but never saw it. But that first episode, what was it? You Can't Fix Ugly, I think it was called.
Yes, Tom.
Yeah. Tom, yeah. That was just, you know, my heart grew two sizes watching that episode. It's like you couldn't not be overwhelmed by the emotion watching that show.
Yeah, as you can tell, you're having trouble finishing your sentences as
yes.
well. Yeah. No, I agree. I think I remember watching the original and enjoying, you know, the hell out of it. And, you know, but when the new one came out, I was looking forward to it, but I was admittedly a little apprehensive in that it just felt like, what else are you going to do?
Yeah, because the old one had such a rigid structure as well, which this one has as well. You know, it follows a very set formula, which is not unwelcome when it comes to reality TV.
I mean, it's comfort food, but I think the thing as well is like that back then you weren't watching it on demand, so you were waiting between weeks and you're in between, you're watching Friends and you didn't have the internet to keep your time busy. So I think that those kind of, that structure wasn't so, these days you can see it straight away. And I think the second season, it was like there was only one trans man, right? The rest of them were men. There was like one, there was a pastor or a lady priest or something like that at one point.
No, there was a woman who was heavily involved in her church.
Yeah.
There was, I think her name was Tammy.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was Tammy. There was, the second season, I think, didn't have as many instantly memorable moments.
Yeah.
You know, I was watching it for the sake of watching it.
Yeah.
But I think we hit a low point when there was that just very, very well-mannered kid who just wanted to go away to college. And I didn't know why we necessarily needed... He didn't need fixing or helping much
don't
at all.
Don't remember
That's the problem.
Yeah, that's...
That's
exactly I had to look up the list and go through it. And I was like, oh, the mayor guy. Remember there was a mayor who looked too young?
Yeah. Like, no, you're right. You're right, Lynn, in the sense that the second season was very forgettable. It was almost as if they were safe choices. They were fairly safe choices.
I wonder whether or not it was they shot a certain amount for season one, and then when it was such a rudder,
it
was such a good hit, they just kind of went, "Oh, we have these as well."
We have these as well.
Yeah, that's
an interesting idea.
It was in the same town, right? I mean,
mostly Alabama, not Alabama, Atlanta, Georgia.
Anyway,
season three. Yeah, I think the heroes they call them.
Yes,
they call them the heroes are a much more varied lot, and I think it works a lot better. And they've also, I mean, you can see the joins a little bit in that, you know, they very clearly, you can see it's a little cynical that like, okay, we're going to put Bobby with the African-American girl who was also adopted and ran away from home at a young age. Like, it, that little bit, like, there's an awful lot of driving around in cars that you don't see. There's probably hours of footage of, like, silence in the car before they spark up a conversation. And, like, it seems like Bobby was her chauffeur until they get to that point.
I mean, season one had Karamo and the police officer.
Yeah.
But I guess it works with Karamo because that's his shtick, right?
Mm.
I didn't find it jarring. I didn't find it grating. I thought it was natural. Not at all.
If you're looking for them, you can see the joins a little bit, but I don't think it took away from the enjoyment at all. And it's still it must be the best research show on television in order to get to those points. Mm. Like, they need to know an awful lot about the person in order to know that they will open to Bobby or Jonathan. I think that they never really put Jonathan in the car, really. He doesn't really do much of the deep diving, does he?
Yeah. Although in season three, he does get really emotional in the barber's chair with someone at one point in one of the episodes.
Because it's a very vulnerable space. The beauty of being in the car is that you're both facing forward and not each other, right? Yeah. Which is what enables those kinds of conversations. But I think the same thing happens in hair salons and in barbers, because, you know, someone's massaging your head, you're going to talk.
Yeah.
I don't know. I really don't want to have a conversation with my, you know, I just want to, like, just cut the hair, like, you know, the weather's fine, let's just move on. I've got my book.
But have you been nominated by a close personal friend to fix your life?
Although I will admit, if Jonathan Van Ness did my hair, I'd be all over the floor, just like,
yes. Yeah. You would be fabulous.
I'd be fabulous.
Yeah, I think I love Queer Eye. I really enjoyed it. And it's, you know, it's there just to make you feel bad, then good, then great.
Yeah.
You know, and that's kind of the structure of it, which I'm completely cool with. I think my problem is that I believe that they might eventually need to start moving away from the self-helpy platitudes right at the end of the episode, because I can do them at this point. You know, I think most of us, if you've seen the episodes, you can do it. Love yourself. It's not about not taking care of yourself.
Mm.
It's about, you know, really opening yourself up. It's about love. And at this point, it's no longer highly specific to the person in the episode. So I feel as if that part gets disjointed because it starts to feel generic.
Well, their car crashes already, so it's kind of like you're applying a splint, as opposed to they took someone who was like almost close to being a functioning human being and then getting them that extra step. I do think that they did nice as well. They're not just doing people's houses and stuff like that. Like, they helped a couple with their business.
Yeah.
They helped the guy with the camp counseling stuff. Like, I do like that they expanded it a little bit more than that. I think they added on the title more than a makeover now, right?
Yeah, they've increased the size and range of the issues that they help with, right?
Yeah, so although Bobby will still just darken every single kitchen cupboard he gets his hands on. That seems to be like, he's doing amazing work and my girlfriend is taking notes constantly on everything we need to do for places.
That's always a problem.
Yeah, but like, seriously, every kitchen is like, and your cabinets are now darker.
He's got a reason for it, I'm sure. I think, although he, in his interstitials, he talks about how you want the cabinets to be light colored, so you draw.
Well, you want the eyes to be drawn upwards.
Yeah,
yes.
I'm taking fashion.
Look at you guys.
Come on.
You guys. I'm just witnessing personal growth. Yeah. From my very
over
eyes.
Three seasons of Queer Eye. It's great.
Beautiful. Okay, so in case you've not had the chance to catch up, or if you have, actually come and chat with us on Skip Intro MY, because we would love to hear what you think, and you can find us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Up next, we're going to be continuing our conversation about what exactly it is about this formula of Queer Eye that's making it sing. Keep it here on Skip Intro, BFM 89.9.
Bigotry Free Malaysia, BFM 89.9.
You are listening to Skip Intro with Lynn, Ian and Bahe, and today we are talking about Queer Eye because, of course, season 3 just came out and everybody would have been binging it over the weekend because it's just that kind of show. So we all liked the season.
Yeah.
What do you think it is that's making Queer Eye, you know, because it's not as if reality TV went away.
Yeah.
It's just kind of hung around since it first showed up.
I mean, Survivor is still going strong in the US as far as I know. Yeah, I see people talking about it, but I literally have zero interest in watching that.
The Bachelor is still on television.
That's true.
Yeah, so yeah, that's true.
It's. I think Queer Eye, is it because it's not cynical? Is it because it doesn't feel cynical?
I was going to say, I think compared to what all the other, you know, shows we just mentioned, right? Like Survivor, it starts off, and even I remember reading books and seeing interviews with Mark Burnett about the first season. They were not expecting it to be as snarky, as backstabby as it ended up being, and so even he felt like that first season really essentially gave everybody else who took part in the show in the subsequent 20 years, whatever it was, permission to be backstabby and jerky and be a pain in the butt to all your other people, to all the other sort of castaways in the show. Initially, it was about these...
humanity coming together to overcome
problems? Not necessarily coming together, but, you know, he wasn't expecting the problems that ended up coming out and becoming a signature of the show in season one, right?
I think part of it is that you can't dangle a price. You know, in Survivor, you've got that $1 million. Yeah. In Bachelor, you've got, oh, the wedding, love of your life. You know,
that you met last week.
Exactly. So you've got all these things that you dangle, and at the end, you got to win something. America's Next Top Model, same thing.
And I think it's also the cameras. It's the performance in front of a camera. It's the performance in front of, hey, everybody, I'm going to be the worst jerk guy ever, and I'll show you that wins me the $1 million.
Yeah, that's the thing. So when you have, I guess, reason for people to behave poorly, then they're going to do it.
Yeah.
But thinking about something like Queer Eye, where they're not doing, it's not like central casting. Yeah. You know, it's nominations, it's usually, and they seem to pick at least slightly based on who deserves it.
Yeah.
So I think there seems to be that kind of softness that informs the show from the base up, and then that helps. But I'm just thinking also of something like Terrace House. You know, where, again, there's no prize. There's nothing at the end of Terrace House that you have to win. It's just, oh, I am self-actualized now. Arigato gozaimasu.
Terrace House is a great example of just like the opposite of what an American house filled with cameras is, right?
For example, the one season that they went to America was awful.
I've only seen a handful of episodes.
Was that just the real world in the end?
Yeah, but in the sort of original iterations of the show, like Lynn says, there isn't a competition. They're not fighting amongst each other. One guy just comes home from work and they go like, how was your day? It's good. Let's go for a swim. You know, it's very simple, and there's no like snarkiness. And I think a couple of the seasons had a couple of snarky characters, but I think maybe the competition element thing works, right? It sort of brings out the worst in people.
Mm. I think so. You know, and it's something that Queer Eye doesn't have. It's not like who transformed the most at the end of the season, you know? It's really just individual vignettes of loveliness.
And I think the characters play a big role. I thought I'd like Marie Kondo.
Yeah.
I didn't.
I bounced off that. I think it was because I was watching it, looking at the tidying up, and I said, where's Jonathan and Karamo and the rest? This is just the Bobby bit. And also, like, that the very first episode of Marie Kondo, there's a house where they have those letters, you know, those kind of like letters people love that my girlfriend keeps wanting me to buy them for the house to just like put on top of something. They say love or friendship or something.
Uh-huh.
Just big wooden letters.
Yeah, yeah.
They have that. Their living room is put together. They have a nice living room in that first episode of Marie Kondo. It's the rest of the house is a car crash.
Yeah, yeah.
They just remove stuff.
Yeah.
They don't darken any cupboards. They don't, you know, they don't blow out the back doors or anything like that.
It's about decluttering.
Yeah. And I found it hugely unsatisfying. It's like their life is slightly better than it was before, but they still will probably clutter it up all over again. They haven't really come away.
As soon as the cameras left.
Yeah. I couldn't, I think the Hawaiian, was it a Hawaiian couple? Or there was an Asian couple, an Asian American couple was the one where I got to, and I was like, okay, that was slightly satisfying, but seriously, we have other things to watch. So I after that, I was done with Marie Kondo.
And I suppose with Marie Kondo, it's a little bit, it's trickier because it's very focused on one thing.
Mm.
You know, she has one thing that she does.
Yeah.
With Queer Eye, you get five.
Yeah, and there's also the chemistry of the guys. Yeah. I don't think we should discount the fact that I think Jonathan described the casting process as you've never seen so many gay men in one room trying to, you know, out-social each other.
Yeah.
Just like, what did he say? Mingle the death out of each other, I think was what he said. And so there is that element of, you know, of all that aggressive mingling, you found these five and they're so great together.
Yeah, they haven't changed much since the first episode. Their interactions are the same. And I think I saw some of that interview stuff as well, where they're just throwing them in rooms and popping people in and out to see how the chemistry works. And they look like they've been together since they were teenagers.
Yeah, and it's really weird. When I saw the first episode of the new Queer Eye before I did any research into any of them, so to then find out that they came together for the show, because I could have sworn they were friends.
It felt like it was another network show that came over, like if somebody feed Phil and they just changed the name slightly.
Yeah,
right?
But it just felt like these guys were not only just like friends on a show, they looked like they were friends in real life, like they've been hanging out for 10, 12 years.
Yep.
Oh, and by the way, there's an English guy.
Yeah. You know?
It's just so weird, that relationship they have amongst each other.
And I think the chemistry might actually be better than the original Fab Five.
I agree, yeah.
Which is not to say, which is not at all to diss the originals. They were great as well, but it's a little different. And I also think there's an element of, I don't mean to use the word lightly, but I think there's an element of wokeness to this queer eye that the old one didn't have.
Well, I think they set out with the first one, like it's very clear why they're in Atlanta, Georgia. Because, like, you know, they have, like, the cops who are afraid of black guys. There's, like, you know, what's his name? Tom, the first guy. He very clearly hasn't had gay people in his house before. You know, there is an awful lot of that, that they are very much setting out to, you know, cross these boundaries and make sure that it's not about that, apart from, like, the fact that they can help them.
Win hearts and minds,
yeah. And it does it without, like, being overbearing. They never seem to, you know, they never, overbearing is the wrong word, but they never seem to force themselves on the people they're helping. And, like, they win them over naturally.
Yeah.
It seems. Once the show came out, you know, we were hungry for more. I was hungry for more. And there was a show that appeared on Netflix that since disappeared off Netflix because it was called 100% Hotter. And it was just, it was an example of how wrong you could go with this show. In the new series, there's a point with the camp counselor where he says he doesn't shower an awful lot because he's out in the sun all the time. He gets sweaty instantly. It's a hot state. Tan doesn't shame him in any way, shape, or form for that. When they go looking for clothes, he just says, get something more breathable. So you, like, even if you're going to sweat, you won't stink it up. This 100% Hotter show, I think we could manage maybe one episode before, like, we're almost throwing up watching it. They took a woman who was, like, she was very much covered head to toe in permatan, big blonde hair. Basically, she had drawn herself up as a Barbie. And it was very clear to anyone watching the show that she had serious problems that she was trying to paper over the cracks. And the show made her, like, get out of her normal clothes into a big t-shirt and then go out into the public and get them to rate her then with the idea that after her make-under, they would rate her later. So they got goth girls on there and they kind of normalized them. And it was absolutely horrifying to watch. And I'm glad it's no longer on Netflix so
that
you can't watch it.
That sounds offensive.
It was offensive. Yeah, it really was. Weird. And it just shows you how they thought probably they, I mean, it's a different, you know, setup in the UK, but they thought they were doing a good show. And it was absolute, it was almost like a war crime.
And I think that's what it is, right? It's maybe they didn't come with it with the honesty.
Yeah.
And maybe it was too snarky, too cynical, too.
It was more about making this person normal rather than finding their true authentic self, which is what they do so much better on that show.
Yeah.
That's, I think, the worrying thing about reality shows, isn't it? I mean, in other hands, right? You have the spectrum. So you've got the spectrum of 100% hotter on one end where you just have this...
The evil end.
Yeah, you know, where it's kind of built very much on the premise that this is a shallow genre. Let's make a super shallow show and then shallow people will watch it and like it. And so that can get real cynical real fast. And then on the other side of it, you have, hi, we're going to help you reunite with your ex-wife. Yeah. And that also can potentially go down the chicken soup path, you know, just really, really fast. And so I think what Queer Eye has managed to do and to balance so far really well is to sit, you know, in the path of where we can all honestly say, they seem to be honest.
And it feels genuine.
Yeah, but that's rare. I mean, that's a very rare quality in reality. Yeah.
Prior to this, I mean, that's why I kind of gave up on reality TV shows because you knew they were manipulating things. Like they would say, well, I wasn't that bad in The House and Big Brother because, like, I said that in one interview and this in another interview. And you see it where they make people, they do a little bit of Mary Kondo as well. You're wearing the same clothes every time they shoot so that they can intercut different things. So if you decide to wear a bright orange t-shirt or blorange, as Jonathan said at one point, mix of orange and blonde.
Yeah.
They will cut that out because they can't manipulate the footage to make you look like an ass.
I mean, it's a very sort of, you know, known open secret that the camera's always recording. Mm-hmm. So for example, something like the Kardashians, where in one episode they'll make it look like it's a day, but, you know, they've taken tidbits of dialogue from other days and other conversations that have got no relation to what's going on right now, and suddenly it's, you know, Khloe hates Kim.
So we've not been talking about that. We've been talking about the loveliness that is Queer Eye. Come cry with us. Come watch it and cry with us on social media. Again, it's Skip Intro MY. You can find us on Facebook. You can find us on Twitter as well as on Instagram. Let us know what you thought. And also, if you missed any part of the show, you can get it on bfm.my/skipintro. Our podcasts are all there. And we'll see you back here again tomorrow. BFM 89.9.